What do MHKs get up to during the summer recess? You might be surprised at how much is being done out of the immediate political gaze, and MHKs Corlett, Glover and Smith are keen to tell us all about it. We'll start with Arbury, Castletown and Maloo MHK Tim Glover.
Yeah, the summer recess, the only difference is that you aren't having to prepare and go to sittings of Timwald and the House of Keys, but all other aspects of the role, they continue.
The sorts of things that you have to get up to, I mean, obviously there is constituency work, and one of the criticisms, certainly in the four elections that I fought, three successful, one not so, the frequent question or comment that you would get was, oh well, we never see you MHKs from one year to the next, or one election to the next. It's only election time we ever get to see you, and to a certain extent they may be right, in as much as, you know, actually you elect MHKs so that they can go out to their into government and effect change. How do you get that balance right?
I think it's really important to be out and about and seen in the constituency. And I think one thing right from the very start that both Jason and I have done is we agreed we would do monthly surgeries, and they continue through the summer months. We also made that decision as well. So we are going around our constituency by rotation. So every 3 months we'll be in one part of the constituency of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. But the summer as well, there are lots of events on, and an awful lot in the constituency. And it's really important to go there and be seen to be there and available to talk to people, to chat to people, to find out things. You'll always get the sorry to bother you,
yeah,
as a standard opening remark. And I say there's no need to apologise. That's what we're here for.
Absolutely.
You know?
And of course, that chance encounter is often the only way that you're ever going to get to find out about those things, because people, on the whole, they'll be thinking, I'm not that bothered about it. I'm not going to be bothered enough to actually go to a surgery or write an email or make a phone call. But there he is now. Do you know?
I'll go and grab him.
I'll have a word.
Yeah.
And that's what what helps you as a parliamentarian to actually effect the change that people want, because the silent majority are out there, and their view is often not heard because, it's not that important, really.
Well, the other thing, and I'll give an example, I'm going to do more of that again this year. There's an awful lot of new residents and new housing in Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. And I went round the big estate, which is getting bigger and bigger, and there's more to go and see this summer in Ballasalla. But also there was the Meadow View estate in Castletown, the Meadows, and that's where I became, just by going and knocking on the doors, introducing myself. If they were out putting a leaflet, almost in election mode, if you like, but it was just to introduce them to their MHK. And it was from that I discovered, from talking to people there, a whole tranche of issues that were there within the estate, and it wasn't being completed. Won't go there. That's a legal dispute that's ongoing at the moment. But there were issues with around 96 occupied houses. Half of them hadn't had their water dye test done before they were sold, you know.
Yeah.
And that would have become an issue for those homeowners when they were wanting to then sell. So that was something that I managed to sort out, and the tests have now been done by Manx Utilities. But it's taken a year of pressuring Manx Utilities to do this on behalf of the residents, which they've now done within the last month, finished that job. So all of these things, and the unadopted roads which flood every time it rains, I'm still pushing at that door. That all came about from an initiative to go and visit people in that estate, because they were new to the constituency as well, or had moved to the estate from within the constituency. So it's really important to use the recess to go out there and go meet and talk to people.
And you talk about the estate. I mean, there's still a number of elements from the old developer left at the entrance to that estate. I mean, is there any word as to when all that's going to get finally sorted?
No, I mean, in March, I think the first hearing was, there's a dispute between the landowner and the building firm that have been doing the housing there. So these things, as you know, can rumble on, can't they?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
At least those residents know that their MHKs are fighting their backs.
I guess as well you will have committee work. I mean, you're also involved with the is it the Office of Fair Trade? Yes. So those things will take up some of your time as well.
They do, and the board meetings again continue over the summer recess, so that work doesn't stop, and there's an awful lot of documentation to have read through before those board meetings. And, you know, if you're chairing a meeting, you need to be across everything that is coming through that meeting. So you need to have read all those documents before each board meeting. And just while I'm on, I do want to praise the work of the OFT over the summer, because a few weeks ago there was a release put out about the small team there, and they'd seized hundreds of fake Labubu dolls. 200 toys branded as potentially dangerous were found in two stores in Douglas. They're fake, parts come away and are choking hazards. And I thought that was tremendous work at the time. I've seen these dolls and how fragile they are at the end of July when I was at the board meeting at the OFT. And it's only a couple of weeks later that this is now being widely reported as happening in the UK. So I think our team at the OFT were actually ahead of the game on this scam that was going on. And I just want to thank them for all the work that they do that goes pretty much unnoticed throughout the whole year. But that story now about these fake Labubu dolls is rife across the UK networks now in news reporting. So well done to the team.
Is the summer recess too long, do you think, or is it about right?
I've argued from day one it's too long. I think we should be back in September. I think we've looked at other areas close to us, and we're probably one of the longest recesses that there is out there. So I do think it's too long. But the flip side of that, it is a chance, particularly with all the committee work that takes place and all the reports that are being compiled, and you know how many committees there are within Tynwald. It's a vast amount of work for the Tynwald office to undertake. The summer recess does give them a chance to catch up, and that's important to reflect on as well. It is a chance for departments, I guess, as well as the Tynwald office to get bang up to date and ready for the off when it comes in October. But I lean more towards, I think we're off for too long.
And we're 4 years into this House of Keys term. I can't remember now all the commitments that you may have made in your manifestos. How well do you think you're doing in terms of what you said you were going to try and do?
Well, the only promise I made in my manifesto was that I would try my damnedest and hardest and my best for the constituents and for the people of the island. And I think I'm doing that. I didn't make wild promises because I think you're one of 24. And you've got to have a majority of those 24 to provide on those promises that you make in a manifesto. You can show where you believe policy is, and I think I've stuck to my guns on that, and obviously I'm very much a backbencher because of that, but I wanted to stick to my principles. That's what I believe got me elected, and so that's what I've stuck to.
And what do you hope to achieve? Obviously, you've got a year left before the next election. What do you hope to achieve in that year?
Just to carry on trying to present another view of what is going on. I can't see that the administration is going to change course in the last year. If it because it's sort of what's it been doing for the previous 4 years, I can't see that changing. So I'm just going to keep across that. I've not decided whether I'm standing yet. It's too early a year out to say whether you are or not. It's got to be a mutual decision. It's a decision that's got to be made with my wife, Jane. And, you know, Jane's not had the best of years. She's had a few difficulties. So it has to be a joint decision nearer the time between the two of us.
Hmm. But obviously you'll be at least starting to think about that.
I'll be honest. I would love to stand again, but that isn't a decision I can make on my own. Well, I think the other thing, obviously, particularly from now on, you've had that breathing space, but if you keep it, you have to keep an eye on the Register of Business for Tynwald and keep on top of that, because the October sitting is notoriously a long and busy one. So there are already some pretty meaty items beginning to appear on that register. So again, that's more reading that needs to be done. So while you've got this chance, stay on top of that work as well, because then you're better prepared for the start of the year.
That was Tim Glover. Next, Douglas Central MHK, Anne Corlett. You, obviously, like all the MHKs, are often painted as having these wonderfully long summer holidays to be able to sit in the garden or go off on exotic holidays, doing all these sorts of things. It's not really like that, is it?
No, it isn't. You know, much of government, Tynwald and Keys, much of it actually goes on department work, one thing. I mean, I do like to get a holiday if I can, I'll be honest. I do love a holiday, but I've had me week, so it's back to usual. And as I say, all of your department commitments, all of your committee commitments, all of your board positions, all of that carries on as it always does year round. So essentially, no Keys or Tynwald, you should get your Tuesdays back and the time that you use for prep, which it is really nice to do that, actually, because it gives you time. For me, personally, I like to get out in the constituency and listen to what constituents have got to say. So it's an ideal time to do that, especially if the weather's nice.
And that's one of the most fundamental parts about being an MHK, isn't it? You aren't there necessarily to represent your constituents' every view. You know, it's not like a referendum.
No.
But you are there to be able to judge. You know, your role is to listen to everyone and then try and work out what the best way forward is. And the only way you can do that is by understanding really what the people in your area think.
That's it, absolutely. And you really do have to take time out to do that, and which for me is great because I'm very much a people person. I love people and I'll talk till the cows come home to people. But it's about listening to opinions and then trying to gauge what's the best way forward or what's the best decision to make on the back of what people have said to you and the discussions you've had with them.
And what do you think, I mean, because everyone says about every government I think there's ever been since Isle of Man government was invented that this is the worst government we've ever had. Are they saying that, and do they have any merit in saying that?
Look, you're right. It is always the worst, particularly when we get to this time in any administration. But I have to say, I am frustrated with the speed that government's moving at, that Parliament's moving at. It is very frustrating, and I didn't feel like this during the last administration. I came out positive. Maybe we'd had COVID, it was a really difficult time and we were all looking forward to something better. But I do feel frustrated this time. You're going out for election in 12 months' time with the same issues as you stood on the doorstep with last time, and that is hard.
It's difficult, I think, for people to really, I mean, and I say this as someone who's experienced both sides of this now, both in terms of trying to hold politicians to account through the media, but also as a former minister, former MHK, It is quite difficult to understand how so little progress seems to be made on that big ticket issue, which was housing. That was the one thing that everyone said, well, we must sort this out. This has to be, you know, there was a real call for action. But we don't seem to be making an awful lot of progress.
No, I think you're right. I mean, progress is being made, and it is a big issue, and it's an expensive issue. So funding is essential, and we haven't got a lot of money. But, you know, having the OHAN done, so at least we can...
And that's the housing needs assessment.
So at least that gives us a indication of what is needed into the future. It's funding the development and production of that, really. And as you know, that's really difficult, particularly in social housing, because DOI don't have the ability to borrow. And that was the reason that a housing association was kind of, you know, the idea was floated. But I think money is holding us back, and we can't rely on developers to suddenly build a load of houses, because it doesn't benefit them to do it. If we were to build 1,000 houses this year, the property prices would decrease massively, which is great for all of us buying houses, but leaves everyone else in negative equity. So it's a balance, isn't it? But I don't think, you know, we're tipping the scales in the right way.
Yeah.
Up to now.
And I suppose that, you know, in terms of that whole equity thing, I mean, it was always described as me in the brief time that I was housing minister, that it's a little bit like that game, is it Jack Straw or whatever? Mm. You pull one straw out, and then something, some unintended collapse happens somewhere else.
That's
it's,
right.
It's quite a delicately poised and balanced thing, this whole thing.
Yes, and there's consequences that you are aware of, and so you can sort of try to negate those, but there are always unintended consequences that show up that, you know, we haven't thought about.
And yet, anyone who's been trying to buy a house or wants to rent a property will not really be noticing much difference, but certainly unless there's a dramatic change in the next 12 months from where they were, you know, back in 2016.
And rental is really difficult too, because that's around supply and demand, and demand outstrips supply massively at the moment, which pushes prices up. It's, you know, it is really a bit of a vicious circle at the minute.
And the other thing that your name has been all over, of course, and everyone is now, particularly in the infrastructure department, you see, it was all Tynwald's idea. It wasn't anything to do with us. This was the 20-mile-an-hour home zone idea. I suppose it was inevitably there was going to be some sort of backlash, but in terms of what you were looking for in your constituency, you presumably a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit is generally popular.
Yes, I mean, it's not everybody's, not everyone's in agreement with it, but, you know, we had a consultation in a large part of Douglas Central, and 77% of respondents, and there were a lot of respondents, were for a 20-mile-an-hour limit. So, you know, this is kind of not my thing. This is what I talked to people. I went out and knocked doors, and this is what they told me they wanted. And there's an element of safety in it, but there's also an element of livability. Douglas Central is hugely residential. We don't have a lot of businesses or shops in our constituency. It is packed residentially. And we have to live amongst the shortcuts into town, and, you know, there's an awful lot of parking. So you've got narrow streets with parking on both sides, and people are trying to cross the road in between parked cars. That is really dangerous, particularly with electric cars now, because you can't even hear them coming. So as far as my agenda in the whole thing, that I feel I've achieved what I set out to achieve for Douglas Central. And as I say, I don't have total support in that, but it's what I feel was the right thing
it's
to do.
It's very rare, I would imagine, that you would get total support from it for anything
absolutely.
That you do. And again, going back to what we were saying at the start, your job as an MHK is to assess what you've been told by your constituents and then try and find the best solution.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I tried to do that just by dealing with the department and I didn't get anywhere. So I decided to put a motion down. And you know yourself, the problem with emotions, with motions is that you've got to word them carefully. And my original motion, I worded with the then DOI Minister, Tim Baker, had been very helpful in that. Well, it wasn't a motion, actually. It was an amendment to his amendment. So right. It was so confused at the time anyway.
Yeah.
But then when that comes... is agreed and it goes to the department to carry out, it's very much the words on the paper, not the debate or the intention or what was behind it. So it very often goes wrong at that point because there's a disconnect between what was intended by Timwald and what the department sees on the piece of paper to carry out. And that's not just in the 20 mile an hour thing, that's happening all the time with motions, particularly when you get several amendments to it, which sometimes come on the hoof. You know what it's like in Tim, come on the hoof, and you're thinking, well, that looks all right, actually. I think that's... But you've no time to think around unintended consequences. So I think motions can be difficult, and there's not enough interaction between the person or the people that have supported the motion and the department that's carrying it out.
Mm-hmm. So... we are now 4 years into your... was it a full first term?
Yes, it was. Yes,
so this is your second term then as an MHK. I guess at election time back in... When is it? 2021, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That you will have made certain commitments to your constituents. 4 years in, are you? Do you feel that you're living up to what you said back then, or have circumstances changed?
I mean, as regards commitments, you know, it's difficult because you can't promise anything, and so your manifesto is: this is what I'd like to see, this is what I'm aiming for, this is what I'll push for. And there was lots of things. There was things around overcapacity at Ballacameen that I wanted to get sorted out, which was some sort of sixth form centre in Douglas, which we haven't got to. And it's hard, you know, because when you're talking about the big issues, you, if you're going to bring something forward, you need support, or if somebody else has done it, they need your support to get those big things changed, to make a difference in that area. And I suppose for me, what balances out the frustration in that, and it is frustrating, is that the constituency things that you can do, that you can do on your own sometimes. You can steer people, support people through processes to help them get what they want. So I kind of always, what keeps me going is I think on my own, no, I can't change the world, but I can change somebody's world. So those are the things that actually keep you going, is when you can help people in the constituency sort of keep the fire lit in, and your passion to keep on with the bigger things, because I'm sure you know how it is. You've got to go on and on and on about something before anything gets done.
It's often the case, isn't it? But one of the most... important things that an MHK has to do is work with their colleagues. I mean, I've heard from some some people on these programmes that I make, and others off record, saying that this is quite a divided House of Keys and Tynwald at the moment. I mean, first of all, is that the case? And secondly, where are the deal makers? You know, where's the? I mean, I hate to quote Donald Trump, but
no.
You know, where are the people who are trying to bring people together to try and, you know, take the opposing views and try and find compromise?
Yeah, and I've obviously this is my second experience of administration, and I have to, I'll be totally honest, this is wholly different to the last one. Mm. The last administration, we didn't all agree with each other. We could have some real arguments about things, but it was more cohesive and more, I don't know, there was more discussion, you know, more collaboration, I think. And I don't know whether COVID had some sort of effect on that, you know, and it's a different way of working this time in the administration. But certainly from, you know, we're on level four, all our officers are on level four. And last administration, any time you went in, there were always a number of members about. And that's not the way this time. And I don't know whether that is something to do with COVID and we got used to working from home and got separated a bit. But I do think we're losing something here in that we're not together enough, not discussing things enough. I mean, motions appear on the order paper that nobody's discussed anything about. I say my only experience is last administration, but if I was bringing a motion, I would absolutely talk to other members to see if I had any support at all before I brought it forward. So, yeah, it's a different way of working.
Mm-hmm. And one of the advantages of having this summer recess was that you would have the opportunity to talk to your colleagues and actually discuss things and maybe say, you know, I would really like to succeed in getting a motion down to Tynwald which is supported to deliver on whatever the policy might be. And yeah, you don't do that by writing a brilliant speech. You know, I often used to say, well, I would still say today, if I was bringing a motion to Tynwald, the hard work happens before the debate. That's not to say that you are stifling debate, that you are trying to just get things nodded through. That's certainly not the case, but you want to understand what the people who perhaps disagree or are still to be persuaded, you want to understand from them before the debate happens what are their concerns and how can you potentially address their concerns. And ideally, that means that when you do come to give your speech on the Tynwald sitting or Keys sitting, you know what the issues are. You're able to present a better case.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I think you're absolutely right. The bulk of the work is done before the sitting, really. And that's not to say you have stifled debate or that people have made up their minds, because I can honestly say I've gone into sittings been quite sure about how I'm going to vote something and changed my mind because of something somebody said that I didn't think about it that way. Actually, that's so that even though you've done some groundwork before, you know, the end result is always coming from that debate in Tynwald.
Have we got enough people who are capable of taking a Tynwald from a particular direction that you know, they seem to have coalesced around and saying, yeah, actually, hang on, have you thought about this, that and the other? And actually maybe shifting the debate. We don't seem to have, maybe it's just me, maybe it's me looking back with rose-tinted spectacles, but there doesn't seem to be the those authoritative voices that can maybe give Tynwald a bit of a wake-up call.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It does seem quite divided at the moment, doesn't it? And it's difficult, isn't it? Because we've had a comb-in where people have been in and out, and every time somebody comes out, whether it's their own choice or not, essentially you've got somebody discontented then sitting on the back bench, haven't you?
Hmm.
You know, that isn't going to take the comb in line, no matter what, in some cases. So I think also that revolving door of ministers that we've had has not helped, really, because for me, every time you lose a minister as chief minister, you're kind of creating an enemy.
And is that, I suppose, then the chief minister being the victim of his own what he thought was going to be a successful strategy of either you perform or you're out.
Yeah.
And of course that has famously happened in relation to the many of the senior civil servants that had been advising government and had significant knowledge. A lot of those went fairly early on, presumably because they were an obstacle to change, or they were deemed to be an obstacle to change. And of course the same seems to have happened to several ministers during this administration. It's certainly been there's been a lot of churn in terms of the senior role.
Yeah, there has. And there's been quite a bit of churn in chief officers too. You know, we've still got some interim ones. I don't think that helps, really, insofar as planning ahead and feeling secure. And so, and also, I mean, I think too, the creation of the extra minister to 10 in Comyn, I'm not behind that really, because I think the balance is very fine as it is with only 24 members.
Yeah.
And, you know, to build the power base of Comyn one further, I don't think is the right thing to do.
Well, you've got a year left now before the next election, I guess. Your thoughts may be starting to look forward to an election in 2026. What would you hope to achieve over the next 12 months? What are the outstanding matters that you really want to get sorted?
The most frustrating thing is I don't think I'll get anything actually finished. But I sit on the Housing and Community Board. I really want to push further on that. We've got... I chair social affairs, so we need to do some rounding up on reporting for that, really. We've taken an awful lot of evidence and need to compile that into some report with some, at least, conclusions, if not recommendations. I sit on this dyslexia committee, which is due to report soon. I'm hoping, actually, the recommendations that we come to will have some influence on Department of Education. So really, I'm just keen to keep on working till the last day before the administration finishes to try to get things progressed. And I know, you know, there's always a feeling like people back off because we're coming to election. I absolutely don't want us to do that. You get 5 years. You absolutely have to do all that you can in that time. And if you don't get something finished, that's okay, but at least make some progress on it.
Yeah. And are we looking forward to or thinking at least of maybe having a go for another 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Because everything takes so long, there is so much I want to see happen that hasn't happened. So, you know, I would absolutely love another 5 years. But who knows? It's down to the electorate in the end, isn't it?
That was Anne Call at MHK. Finally, Garth MHK, Andrew Smith.
Obviously, many people will recognise the hubbub that happens when parliamentary sittings are underway. And possibly from a radio and a media perspective, there's far more profile in those days. But obviously, during the recess, there's still a lot of things to continue moving forward, and that's really what we do during the summer time. So yes, you take a chance to have time with family and friends, and possibly travel off island on holiday or have your holiday at on the island. But other than that, there are still things to be undertaken. Treasury Board, obviously, as you know, probably from your time in government, will recognise they meet every week, irrespective. Now, in the summertime, in fairness, possibly August of any month, it may be that the agenda may be light, but that means then we may not have a physical meeting, but we still have to have an online, you know, meeting to agree things, to discuss things. Otherwise, the departments that rely on owners for those decisions would be waiting until when, and we don't want that. That's not the process. We try to keep it the wheels well oiled, as it were.
Do you think possibly the Tynwald questioners and Keyes questioners have become a victim of their own success because there's so much made of that in the media and on social media, that when it stops, all of a sudden the assumption is that work has stopped.
Yeah, well, that probably creates a bit of a vacuum to a certain extent. Think, well, okay, there's nothing happening. Social media may be quiet, although not always. I'm not a great engager with social media, because sadly from my perspective, and I think one or two of others also experienced it recently, and you'll have seen that on your your own website, in one of our members had an email sent, fake email on their behalf. I've received another one from a purported member from somebody else, and I'm just thinking, well, you know, it's not a safe platform, and people can often blast off on social media, and then if you respond the next minute, the comment's gone. And there's no redress, I just think it can be. There's a place for it, but I believe that it can be a bit of you're in a bit of a dichotomy as to say, well, okay, well, I'll engage with this, but then it can backfire on you. So I think there is a time and a place to use that, but I think there's other channels that can be just as easily used. And I mean, listen, I have a political surgery every Saturday when I'm at the Fairy Cottage filling station, so people know, because again, a lot of people don't want, they want to see you, they want to talk about their situation or a problem. But they don't necessarily want to come into an office. They don't want to actually say, well, I've only got this limited time in a surgery, where you're a bit like a doctor and saying, well, I can give you 5 minutes, I've got a queue here, you know, please wait your turn. So they'd rather be a bit more in a relaxed atmosphere. And that's what I've found in the time that I spend at Fairy Cottage filling station, obviously on a Saturday every Saturday morning. That time between 9:30 and 2:30, people just freely come in, they'll chat 5, 10 minutes, whatever, fill the car up and away they go, and they're happy with that. So again, different people have a different way of how they want to address their constituency work, and that seems to work for me within Garth, and I'm happy with that. And people know that my house is always open if they wish to do, or I'll meet them off site, or I can meet them in Tynwald if they so desire. So you meet your constituents at their in the way they would like to be, you know, kind of met, I believe.
And it is an essential part of being an MHK, understanding what the people think.
All the time. And I think, in fairness, it's also, from my perspective, I've been on the island 39 years this year. And of those 39 years, I've spent 36 in public service. So very soon after I arrived, I was elected to Lax Commissioners. People probably remember when devolvement of financial from the Department of Education went to schools, I was the first community school governor in Lax School. So I've had that role. And then obviously in Treasury, I worked in Treasury as a civil servant prior to that, and then as an MHK in Treasury. So you've had this public-facing role for such a long time. So therefore, you build up a bit of a rapport and a trust with the people that you've known for so long. And sometimes you become almost part of their integral to the family, because they say, oh, yeah, so-and-so, we had an issue. Oh, well, my grandfather, I remember my grandfather with, and you know, so it's. I think it's a privilege. It's a real privilege to know that people have that trust and confidence in you, that they will approach you on some of the topics, which obviously you can't speak about everything on air, but some of the topics that they actually approach you, it's a privilege that they've actually said, well, okay, you've actually come to me to talk about that. And I say, well, so I'm grateful from that, and they know that you're a person that can keep a confidence and hopefully help rather than hinder the process.
And what are the issues that are kind of lighting up the keyboard warriors in your constituency?
I think in fairness for Garth at the moment, the sewage has been on the programme for a long time, as you know. Yeah. I mean, I first started talking about it when I was on the commissioners 30 years ago. I think no one will argue that we want to stop raw sewage flowing into Laxey Bay. I think there's no one on on that side anymore. I think what the issues we've had was there was a scheme, some of the issues we've had, and faults on both sides as to why that scheme kind of went off piste and didn't make the end result. I think the Cairn site initially was possibly suitable for the day, although it had its impositions in that we required a new bridge across the harbour. We required a heavy goods vehicle to be down in the bottom of the village on a regular basis, and one thing or another. So there was kickback from that. Planning didn't go quite as everybody thought it should have done with the consultation process, etc., etc. So that's all in, you know, that's history. That's in the past. We know that. So we've got a new scheme which has now just gone out. It's going through the initial introduction into planning, as it were, with Manx Utilities. But in fairness, I haven't been involved in such a heavily consultation process as has happened for this latest proposal, with all the landowners and property owners and people on the route, and public meetings within the commissioner's offices, and then out and around the Garth area, and plans and one thing or another, and environmental impact assessments and etc., etc., etc. So I think there has been, I don't think anybody could really complain that they haven't had the opportunity, and there is still the full opportunity, because it'll go through exactly the standard planning procedure. So there's still the opportunity for people to feed in even at this stage, and then if it doesn't quite meet, and we have to go through, hopefully not, but if we have to go through an appeal, the process is there. But hopefully it's the best scheme that we can get now as far as Lax is concerned, to combine the Garwick, Glengarwick and Baldrine area, as well as the main Laxey village.
And often with these sorts of schemes, your actual role in Treasury comes in quite handily.
Well, to a certain extent, although obviously I do have to declare where there's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And that's difficult, and you leave the room, obviously, so I can't always be involved in the cut and thrust of it, but I can, the general, I can comment to the general policy, but then there may be things similar with the flooding alleviation schemes that we've had, because of my even deeper involvement in that, because of, I have a daily monitoring service of the works that are ongoing, and obviously I have a website that updates all this and keeps everyone happy.
I suppose that whole conflict of interest thing, yes, if you have a conflict of interest, you should not take a direct role in decision-making. Yeah. Just because you have a conflict of interest doesn't mean to say that you can't be there and do some lobbying.
No, it's not a gag. No, it's not a gagging order. Mm. In fairness, no, you just have that conflict, and I think it's fair you raise it. And sometimes say, well, in fairness, no, it doesn't. It's not relevant here, so you can stay.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you were physically fighting for a capital scheme in the constituency, and then you were also able to actually agree it round the table and sign off the expense for that, then I think that, that's a bit too close to home. So no, I'm happy to do all the groundwork and say, well, we need this, we need that, put the arguments forward, and normally gain as a consequence of that, you would gain the also the support of the particular department, because obviously for the drainage, for the flooding mitigation works, it's DOI, through flood management team. So you've got to engage all the parties, and then you can say, well, this is the scheme, and that's what happens. So obviously we've got currently the next phase has been set in motion for this summertime for Laxey. So we're working in Laxey again now for the time we were allowed. We're only allowed in the river for 3 months of the year because of DEFA's criteria. So we've got to work, obviously, in this time of year when hopefully we don't get the rainfall that we get other times of year. Well, you can't always be sure of that. So we're working on that. But also there's a scheme that I'm deeply involved in further out in Garth, because obviously spreading, there are other areas within Garth, so I don't want to be seen as laxicentric. That's not right.
Yeah.
Because I've got the bigger area to consider, and there's another fairly major scheme that I'm actually trying to develop and work on for quite a number of properties that have got significant issues within the Mackled area. So we're working on that as well, and I've already had three site meetings. So we're trying to just. But again, I think it's important that you see again you're engaging. So it's not just a case of saying, well, we'll have a meeting, we'll do a desktop survey, and then we'll dictate to whoever we're looking to alleviate and say, well, this is what's... Well, hang on a minute. Well, have you not thought of that? Have you not thought? So by having a site meeting with the officers concerned through the various different departments, then you've got an understanding of, well, who's paying for it? So you have Treasury there. You say, well, who's actually then driving the scheme? You've got DOI there. And you've got the actual parties involved in the properties. So you keep everyone on side, keep everyone hopefully happy. And if the job is successful, then win, win, win.
You're 4 years in now, obviously, and there's a year to go.
Yeah.
Have you achieved what you wanted to? Is there still much to do?
The ambition you have, I think, when you first arrive, is that things will happen overnight. Sadly, from your experience, you can attest to that. It doesn't quite work the same. I'd like to think that we have moved on and we have achieved certain things and ticked the box, as it were, say, right, well, that's finalised, we can move on. But there were so many quite major capital projects in train when we were elected in 2021 that all you're really doing is you're contributing to those, picking up the baton, as it were, from predecessors to actually ensure that they move at a pace, if possible, that they don't stagnate. And I mean, one of my responsibilities as a part of the SACIC board, you know, the Strategic Asset and Infrastructure Capital, you know, infrastructure projects, etc., is looking where we can dispose of government buildings, of which we're probably the biggest landlord on the island, man.
One of the hardest things in my experience is getting a department to give up an asset that they think,
sadly, the days for what ifs, we haven't got that, the benefit of that time anymore. So I think if a property is past its sell-by date, and it would take far more to develop into what they would like to think they want for its future use, then we just say, well, you don't really need it. So it's better to offload that to someone that has got a use for it and let the money return back to the taxpayer. And that's what we're trying to do. So, but rest assured that in my 4 years, I've only managed to convince the departments, etc., and all the various bodies involved that we didn't need it and it could be sold. So rest assured, it's not a quick process.
It's not a free sale.
It's under scrutiny, and we have to adhere to all kinds of regulations to ensure, as you quite rightly say, because the last thing, and we've done it before, government done it probably in your time, one minute you dispose of it 1 minute, and then the next thing you have to buy it back, and you buy it back at 20 times the cost. That's not what we're looking to do. We're only looking to do the buildings and land that is really of no further strategic value in the current, and how far can we see into the future, in fairness, in the current kind of on the current horizon, and say, well, yeah, let those go. So that's part of the issue.
And I guess usually in this part of the electoral cycle, and I think sadly we've come to the end of the programme, so it'll be just a short answer, this one. Usually around about this time in the electoral cycle, MHK's minds start turning towards the forthcoming election. Any thoughts about another 5 years as Garth MHK?
Well, I think, it's, that's not my decision, really. Obviously, I can make the decision to stand, but I don't make the decision as to whether I'm elected or not. So I think it's just... down to the public, and it's for them to make the, you know, make up their minds.
So that would imply then that you are thinking about staying.
Well, I mean, at the moment, currently, if I, I'm a person that you like to try and see something through to a satisfactory conclusion.
Yeah.
And if there was a chance that if I'm available and able to do that, then it'd be nice to see something through to say, well, I've been involved with this so long, you've got so much. Because sometimes, like anything, you can lose a lot of knowledge and intellect when things change, and then it takes a while for the next person to pick up the baton. That's not an excuse, but I'm just saying that I think that sometimes can be an issue. So it's nice to have some continuity and try to achieve. I'm a bit of an achiever. I like to achieve something if I can.
That was Garth MHK Andrew Smith. So what do you think? Is it helpful to give MHKs a break from the relentless pressure of Keys and Tynwald sittings, to give them a chance to recharge their political vigour and reconnect to the electorate? Or do you think it's a very long holiday that needs to be shortened significantly? And is it really the worst government we've ever had? Really? Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. I'm Phil Gorn. Thanks for listening.